This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:48 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiao Ning. Now, Tan Sri Nazir Razak, the younger brother of former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak, who, by the way, has been convicted of multiple corruption charges, last Friday said that he would introduce a shoot-to-kill anti-graft policy if he were in power. Now, he was answering a hypothetical question at an event, and the banker said he would introduce a method modeled from Hong Kong back in the 1970s to address rampant corruption, where the government offered amnesty to offences pre-1977, but would then adopt a strong approach against future violations.
Now, Tan Sri Nazir Razak added that because there were so many people involved in corruption, now my eyebrows are raised, some amnesty must be given, otherwise everyone will block efforts to clean up the system. His remarks have drawn mixed reactions from opposition lawmakers, with PKR Sungai Buloh MPR Siva Rasa saying that such amnesty could be considered for lesser crimes, but not for something as serious as the 1MDB scandal. Meanwhile, PKR's Lembah Pantai MP Fahmi Fazil said that the principle of Nazir Razak's proposal is good, adding that MACC reform is essential, but is amnesty for lesser crimes and a shoot-to-kill policy the way to go to stamp out corruption in Malaysia? And I think this is a very interesting question. What kind of consequences will it yield when those who are guilty of corrupt practices are actually let go?
So for some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Ira Azhari, Senior Manager for the Democracy and Governance Unit at IDEAS, the think tank. Ira, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. Now, many see corrupt practices having little effect on the lives of individuals. But I think what we'd like to start off with today is really to get an idea of how our lives are touched by corruption. An IDEAS report not too long ago shows that the high cost of living may be in part due to corruption. So help us understand that linkage.
Hi, good morning. So corruption imposes a markup on goods and services and results in increasing prices of goods and goods and services, right? So what does this mean is that at every stage of the supply chain, costs are being increased because the supplier needs to pay a bribe to either circumvent excessive regulations or evade excessive bureaucracy or for personal financial gain. So all these increased costs at every stage of production are then passed on to the consumer, which is us. So in the paper that you mentioned, we use examples from several industries, education, healthcare, and also construction. So in the construction sector, these increased costs at every stage contributes to, for example, high property prices. And in the healthcare industry, you see this happening, you know, with the procurement of medicines, for example. So so all this plays a role in increasing the cost for the end consumer. And it is at this every stage is the problem, actually. So that's where the combating of the corruption needs to happen. It can't just happen at the end stage, but at every level of the supply chain. Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is your report also highlights that corruption takes many forms, right? It's not just bribes. So what are its other forms and why is that necessary to be stamped out as well?
So some of the other forms of corruption include extortion, fraud, and embezzlement. So these are all the sort of different elements of corruption. The basic definition of corruption is the abuse of entrusted power for private gain, right? But it can take all these different forms. So some of them involve use of force, for example, extortion. Fraud involves the sort of the manipulation of financial procedures or records to sort of hide corrupt practices. So all these different forms have different solutions, and also they have different incentives to why each of these types of corruption happen. So it's important to look at, to sort of categorize it so that we can tackle it all in different ways. Yeah.
So you've noted the different ways that corruption can take form, can take shape. You've also talked about how at different levels of a supply chain or at different parts of the business, corruption can happen. What do you see happening if corruption is left unchecked? Like, if you know, why do we need to combat it? I guess putting it simply.
Yeah, so this relates back to the increased cost issue that I mentioned earlier, right? Because when corruption is being left unchecked, that's, you know, you have a wastage of public funds through bribery, through leakages. So corruption undermines the delivery of public services. It results in less efficient government spending. So, for example, you know, the money that's used to build a school or build a hospital, it could have been a lot less if not for corrupt practices in the supply chain. So, of course, increased cost of goods and services that is a result of the bribes that you need to pay at every stage. And of course, ultimately, it erodes trust in government and also in institutions. So this is also something that people don't really talk about, right? Because when you have, when corruption is just so normalized, then, the public will feel, what's the point of, sort of doing things properly or doing things with transparency and accountability when at the end of the day, you're just going to get away with corrupt practices. So that is, I think, something that is quite worrying and that we need to talk about more.
So, yeah. Ira, we do know that recently Tan Sri Nazir Razak came out to say, okay, let's have an amnesty program. But if we look at the wider context, right, we have countries like Norway and Singapore. They rank very high when it comes to corrupt practices by governments and also institutions. Are there lessons to be learned from them which can be implemented here in Malaysia?
I think there are three lessons that we can learn. So firstly, efficient bureaucracies, I think, are really important because when the bureaucracy is efficient and when it's efficient and competent, it creates less room for bribery. You don't need that extra money to so-called grease the wheels. And business regulations also need to be easier and simpler to understand. So it means that you don't have to pay bribes in order to circumvent these regulations, which is one of the findings from our paper. So bribes are paid at every stage because you need to, you don't understand what the regulations and what the rules are. So you sort of need to pay these bribes to get people to help you to circumvent them. So secondly, highly skilled and well-paid civil servants who are able to carry out their jobs efficiently without the need of that extra cash. So that is also one of the findings from some of the research we did. And also, of course, thirdly, strong enforcement of the law. So, you know, having laws are really important, but the enforcement of the law also needs to be carried out without fear or favour. So corruption needs to combated from the highest level, right? So these laws need to apply to everyone. Just because you have power or position doesn't mean that you can get away with corrupt practices. Yeah, so these three things, I think, are really important for us to learn.
And from your standpoint then, Ira, what do you make of the current laws in place in Malaysia to tackle corruption? Is there a gap that needs to be addressed, or is it a matter of enforcement, really, rather than what paper laws we have?
I think it's a combination of both. So, for example, the main law in Malaysia that is meant to tackle corruption is the MACC Act. And the MACC Act is actually pretty thorough, right? I mean, Section 17A was added on as an amendment recently to tackle corporate liability. So it is a matter of enforcement when it comes to the MACC Act. But we also need to remember that to view corruption from a wider perspective, right? So we need other laws as well, such as the Political Financing Act, an Asset Declaration Act, a Freedom of Information Act, and also a Fiscal Responsibility Act, which we don't have any of these at the moment. So you need a combination of all these laws to create an ecosystem where corruption can be prevented at the very beginning. So when you have freedom of information, citizens have the right to information. Asset declaration means that public officials need to declare the amount of assets they have. So all these laws need to work in combination for the entire ecosystem to not to have less incentives for corrupt practices.
Okay, yeah. We talk a lot about the big picture in terms of the laws and the policies to prevent corruption and the consequence of it. But I also want to know, what can we play as individuals? What role can we play as individuals in reducing the incidences of corruption in this country?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, besides the what people always say, you know, don't take a bribe or don't issue bribes. I mean, I think what's really important as well is firstly to keep informed of the changes that we need to reduce corruption. So always keep in mind, right, when in your daily lives, when you are about to purchase something or you look at the price of something and think, you know, is this has this been affected by corruption throughout the supply chain? I think that's really important because we need to really understand how corruption works. And also you can contribute to research and advocacy work on anti-corruption through volunteering or through contributing, you know, your money or your energy to such causes, because that's really important. The work of civil society is a really huge factor in why, you know, corrupt practices, reforms of corrupt practices can be successful. So yeah, so support these causes and keep yourself informed.
Yeah. Ira, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Ira Azhari, Senior Manager for the Democracy and Governance Unit at IDEAS, the think tank, talking to us about the state of corruption efforts to tackle corruption, and how adequate or effective are they. Lots to take away from there at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.